well, my dharma is to be a policeman. There is that. But in the ultimate sense, dharma comes from the root that means to sustain, the Sanskrit root word. So the sustaining quality, the permanent quality of something is, you can say, it's dharma. So from one point of view, you know, to be a strong guy and have a gun is the dharma of a policeman, and to protect the good guys. And, but you look and you say, well, the dharma of fire is to be hot. The dharma of sugar is to be sweet. The dharma of chili is to be hot. So then, living beings, as living beings, we have a permanent dharma, permanent qualities. If sugar is sweet, if chili is hot, what's the quality of a living being? What's its eternal distinguishing feature? So the Vedic teachers say, finally, it's service. I may be American or Indian or Hindu or Christian or whatever, but I'm serving. The shopkeeper serves the customers. The doctor serves the patients. Everyone's serving. I serve my family. I serve my country. But that service is temporary. I'm only temporarily servant of my country, temporarily servant of my family, temporarily the servant of my customers or my constituents. But I'm always a servant. So there's dharma, then there's what's called Sanatan Dharma, which means our eternal dharma. What's that? To serve the Supreme. To serve God.
But are we serving the Supreme through these temporary individual dharmas, or is it that the goal...
That's actually the Vedic system. Right now, you know, we just go out and we get a career and we... You know, I'd like to be a pediatrician, or I'd like to be a nuclear physicist, and it's just, you know, we do what we like to do. And why? Well, to do it, and to get money, or to be whatever. But in the Vedic system, this idea is there, that I do my duty as a whatever my profession is, with the purpose of serving the Supreme. So it's linked in, that my temporary dharma is linked in that sense to my Sanatana Dharma. Yes?
You said that there are some souls and they, by misuse of their freedom, they wanted to imagine another life and they came here. Mm-hmm. So their very first body is a plan.
Mm-hmm. It's really hard to track the very first body because this all happens outside of time. It's very difficult. It gets like more than we can conceive, the first body. But we've been here since forever. So when was the beginning of forever? When was the first day of forever? It's that sort of question. Well, I don't know when it was, but what happened on the first day of forever? We'll not figure it out. So what happens is that we're, in the larger picture, we just keep going around and around. Sometimes we're way up on top, sometimes we're way down at the bottom. Sometimes a plant, sometimes Alexander the Great.
Yes, but by accepting that there is a lift up, and you said that yogis reach the divinity,
mm-hmm.
After that they may be again planned. Not by their will, because you said that.
No, if you once you reach the Supreme,
yeah.
Krishna says you'll not come back down.
So there is some idea of time. It's not only circles.
In the material world, there's time. In the spiritual world, time is absent, which again we can't imagine. You know, how can there be anything without time? But there is. Time is what works here and makes everything go. But on the spiritual platform, time is unnecessary. That's the real in the present. That's where the real in the present is. Here, you can't get out of past, present, and future. It's always going to be in charge. The whole world is ruled by time. But there's a reality which is beyond the constraints of time that we pick up from Bhagavad Gita. Speaking of which, give me a sense of time.
8:48.
Tell me what to do. Should I answer some more questions? You want to chant?
Does someone else have a question?
Ellie. A short question. Why are we saying that plants and animals are lower than us? Why are plants and animals lower than us when in fact plants are the ones...
Why are plants and animals lower than us?
It's like, if without bees there would be no pollination, without plants there would be no oxygen. So the energy that's in those plants, they're as important, if not...
Absolutely, they're fantastic. I'm a big bee fan, and all these creatures contribute in some way to the creation. They're considered lower or lesser because they don't have the freedom for spiritual inquiry. In that sense, the human being who doesn't use his freedom for spiritual inquiry is an animal. Or lower than an animal. Yeah, the animals, they don't have a choice. The human being has a choice and misuses it. He can be lower than the animal. More questions? Yes?
I just wanted to ask about the overpopulation.
That
we're kind of overpopulated as a world, that more and more people are being born. Does that mean something about spirituality in the world? Because, these are teachings from 5,000 years before, but if now we're so much more overpopulated, that does that mean that as a species we evolve more, since there are more blessings?
No. First thing is, this is only one planet. According to the Vedic literature, there's thousands and thousands. So a little bit more population one way or the other on one planet is not a big issue. It's a drop in the bucket, as they say. Is that okay? Does that answer the question?
Yes, you're speaking about a whole universe. I didn't know it's Earth-centered.
Yeah, there's a larger picture there. We tend to think of our planet as being the whole show. But from the Vedic picture, it's just little. It's like a mustard seed in a bag of mustard seeds.
So there is a strict number of souls? There is a strict number of souls?
There's
more
a constant...
here means less...
Less beings. Someplace else. Because the soul is eternal, there are never new ones created or old ones thrown out. So in that sense, there's a finite number, but what the number is unlimited. It's an unlimitedly great fixed number. Yes, is that a question?
Yes, I do have a question. I researched once about Jainism, and I know that there's a sect of Jainism that feels that women are not able to achieve the highest in one lifetime. And I'm just wondering, from your tradition, or if you can speak to that.
The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says very explicitly that it doesn't matter. Striya shudra tata vaishate piyanti parangati. Man, woman, anyone can attain the supreme destination. No glass ceiling. Yes?
My mother has a question, but she doesn't want to ask because she's afraid that she would be provocative.
I've been waiting for that question.
So she took me in the kitchen and she asked, you said that the yogis who attain the supreme and then they come down to teach. So she asks, how do we know it? Did anybody come down and told us that?
Oh yeah. There's lots of action. It, just like Krishna, he's coming from the spiritual world and he's speaking this Bhagavad Gita. There are other self-realized souls, they come.
So
and they
it's
say.
It's like the prophets now in Christianity?
Excuse me?
The prophets that came from the heaven and
Paul.
None of the prophets.
The prophets
in Christianity.
Something like that, you can say. I don't want to make it exactly one-to-one correspondence.
Yeah.
But there are those who are coming like messengers. God has some message.
And they talk to whom? And to whom they talk this message?
Yeah, to whoever wants to hear. What is it? Those who have ears, let them hear. They speak to everyone, but not everyone's interested. So to those who are interested, especially they're speaking. Those who are not interested, who are these guys? What do they know? But those who are interested. So, of course, there may be someone who's presenting that he is a prophet and he's really just a charlatan, a cheater. So we have to know what is actually, what are the qualities of a prophet or of a spiritual person. Main quality is that the message of God, he'll speak. People who come and say, I'm God, you're God, we're all God. That's not God's message. God's message is, I'm God. And you have a relationship with me. So come join in that relationship. So there's so many people that I think, my idea is, forget it. Anybody can do an I think, my idea is. That's not a messenger. No one hires a messenger to go over to John and give him the message of whatever you think. That's not the job. Yes.
So they do feel that in their previous life they reached divinity. Hmm. They feel, because we in our ordinary
not just life, feel, but they'll. If you actually attain perfection, you'll know. It's not just a sort of a vague feeling.
No, I mean in their next life. Because normally we, in our lives, we don't remember which was our previous.
The liberated person goes beyond. Real liberation means that you won't have another material body with forgetfulness and constraints. So if you come, it's voluntarily.
And you remember that you are...
You'll remember.
Okay.
Just like Krishna, he says, I remember all my previous lives.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he's God, but that's another thing. Yes.
According to the messengers, do they come, or do you think, at specific times in need, or something?
Yeah, even Krishna, he says, I come from time to time when dharma is down. To revive spiritual principles. We can talk in the Vedic tradition about who are some of these incarnations or avatars as well. That becomes a big topic. But these things are found in the Bhagavad Gita. So much is there in this Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. Those of you who haven't yet read Bhagavad Gita, there's something in store for you. Yes?
Is there a relation between doing the will of God and happiness?
Sure. When we act for God, we'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
When we act for ourselves, paradoxically, the more I do to have happiness for myself, the more frustrated I'll become. The hand that's trying to keep the food in the palm is not going to enjoy the food. It's the hand that puts the food in the stomach. You think, well, I've got it, I'm going to enjoy it. No, when you put it in the stomach, you'll enjoy it. So when we try to enjoy it for ourselves, what happens? we wind up frustrated. And when we try to give enjoyment to God, what happens? We enjoy insight.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.